and the gas is relatively clean.
That does sound promising. I'll look forward to hearing more about Huayuli in the future.
I suspect we will.
This Moment of Science comes from Indiana University.
Today's program was prepared by Sue Ann Zollinger, with help from Roger Hangarter in biology. There are hundreds more Moments of Science on our website at amomentofscience.org, where you can also view videos and sign up for podcasts. I'm Don Glass.
And I'm Yael Cassander.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Birchtree Counseling and Consulting, Champaign; Cannon Farm, Camargo; Carpet Weavers, Champaign; and Dick's Pharmacy, Arthur. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
It's 2:41 in sports on this Wednesday afternoon. Peyton Manning's list of milestones keeps growing. Manning has broken the NFL record for longest regular season win streak, most wins in a decade, and franchise marks in every major passing category. And this coming Sunday against the Jets, Manning can become the fourth player in league history with 50,000 yards passing if he plays long enough. The three-time MVP needs only 159 yards to join the exclusive club, which includes Brett Favre, Dan Marino, and John Elway. Steelers safety Troy Polamalu didn't practice again because of his injured left knee ligament and doesn't expect to play Sunday against Baltimore. Polamalu is encouraged by an MRI test on Tuesday, but he doesn't expect to practice this week. He's missed 9 full games and most of 2 others with separate ligament injuries in his left knee. Polamalu hasn't played since the opening series against Cincinnati November 15th. TCU's Gary Patterson has been voted the Associated Press College Football Coach of the Year for leading the Horned Frogs to a perfect regular season and their first BCS appearance. Number 3 TCU plays number 6 Boise State in the Fiesta Bowl January 4th. A couple games took place this afternoon in college basketball in the top 25 men's. The Kentucky Wildcats beat Long Beach State 86-73, and number 14 Georgetown beat Harvard 86-70. Illinois and Missouri play their annual Bragging Rights basketball game tonight in St. Louis. The Illini have won 9 straight in the series. They're coming off a 70-67 loss at Georgia on Saturday. The Tigers beat Arkansas Pine Bluff 88-70. And in hockey tonight, it's the Blackhawks at Detroit at 7:30. And that's a look at sports.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Esquire Lounge, corner of Walnut and University in historic downtown Champaign. The Esquire Lounge provides an informal atmosphere for drinking and dining, serving fish on Fridays and sandwiches and pizza every day until 1 a.m.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 23rd of December, 2009. It's the birthday of the poet Robert Bly, born 1926 in Madison, Minnesota. He said, "One day while studying a Yeats poem, I decided to write poetry the rest of my life. I recognized that a single short poem has room for history, music, psychology, religious thought, mood, occult, speculation, character, and events of one's own life." It's the birthday of Norman MacLean, born in Clarinda, Iowa, 1902, grew up in Missoula, Montana, who said, "In our family, there was no clear line between religion and fly fishing. We lived at the junction of great trout rivers in western Montana, and our father was a Presbyterian minister and a fly fisherman who tied his own flies and taught others. He told us about Christ's disciples being fishermen, and we were left to assume that all first-class fishermen on the Sea of Galilee were fly fishermen, and that John, the favorite, was a dry fly fisherman." Norman MacLean was the author of the novella A River Runs Through It. It's the week of Christmas, a week of great stories, O. Henry's The Gift of the Magi, Dickens's A Christmas Carol, and lesser-known stories, too, such as John Updike's story The Carol Sing, about residents of the little town of Tarbox, Massachusetts, who meet at the Tarbox Town Hall every year to rehearse Christmas carols for the annual concert. And this year they're rehearsing The First Noel and Adeste Fidelis, and this time of the year is spent in good cheer, and neighbors together do meet to sit by the fire with friendly desire each other in love to greet. And they're missing the only man able to sing the low notes, Mr. Burley, who had what you'd have to call a God-given bass, who had committed suicide just after Thanksgiving. The members of the chorus go on rehearsing, hitting the wrong notes, wondering why Mr. Burley swallowed cyanide. Nobody talking about him, all of them missing him. The narrator says, "Why? Well, why anything? Why do we come every year, sure as the solstice, to carol these antiquities that, if you listen to the words, would break your heart? Silence, darkness, Jesus, angels. Better, I suppose, to sing than to listen." From John Updike's story, The Carol Sing. Here's a poem for today by Gerald Lachlan, entitled At the University College of North Wales at Bangor. "Most of my students here are very poor. I seldom see them in the pubs. They cannot really afford the prices. As winter hits, they have to decide whether to spend their shillings on the coin-operated heaters or on food. I suspect that heat often wins. You can freeze to death quicker than you will starve. Their incentive is that they will presumably have more comfortable lives if they survive the minimalist conditions of college. The government gives them a small grant from which to buy books. We are encouraged to require very few books. A book is a valued art object here. I never hear a complaint here, and no one misses a tutorial without the most profuse and formal of apologies. In California, my students and I and everyone else, also including the movie stars and politicians and pro athletes, seldom stop for breath in the midst of a constant bitching." A poem entitled At the University College of North Wales at Bangor by Gerald Lachlan, from his new and selected poems published by World Parade Books and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, creators of the Chicago Poetry Tour, a virtual tour of the history of modern poetry featuring archival recordings, photographs, and music. You can find it online at poetryfoundation.org. Edited by Noah Smith and written by Margaret Bain. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 2:48 on the Afternoon Magazine. One of China's most prominent dissidents went on trial today, accused of advocating the overthrow of the state. His defenders say all he did was help organize a petition drive last year, a petition that called for basic rights and democracy. Although 10,000 people signed, he is the only one on trial. NPR's Anthony Kuhn reports from Beijing.
"We support Liu Xiaobo," shouted one of a handful of demonstrators who showed up along with police, journalists, and diplomats outside a Beijing courthouse this morning. Inside, Liu pleaded not guilty to the charges. His wife, Liu Xia, said that given his long history of activism, she had worried that authorities could easily paint her husband as a ringleader of the movement for political reform called the Charter 08.
"I told him that if they arrest anyone first, it'll be you. If they search anyone's home, it'll be ours. And if anyone goes to jail to visit you, it'll be me. I said, I'm so sick of passing the days that way. He said, okay, I'll only sign the charter."
The charter does what Chinese intellectuals often do. It looks at China's modern history and examines why successive governments, from Republicans to nationalists to communists, have failed to deliver a modern and democratic state. Most of the charter was written by Zhang Zuhua, a former Communist Youth League official. He says that both Chinese liberals and conservatives agree on the need for political reform.
"The question is, given China's specific conditions, how do we achieve what we call universal values? In the past two or three decades, nobody has addressed this question very systematically."
In China, leftists are considered conservatives, and it's the rightists who are liberals, the opposite of how it is in the U.S. Charter 08 specifically reflects the views of China's liberals or rightists, and its prescriptions would sound familiar to Americans: separation of powers, federalism, and competitive elections at all levels of government. Liu Xiaobo's former lawyer, Mo Xiaoping, who also signed the charter, says all this is just part of a normal debate about forms of government.
From a legal viewpoint, federalism or a unitary state are just different ways to organize a country. They have absolutely nothing to do with overthrowing the state.
Among the charter's leftist or conservative critics is Zhang Hongliang, an economist at the Central Institute of Nationalities in Beijing. He believes that the charter's drafters are just elitists who only want the kind of democracy that they can control and profit from.
Charter 08 calls for freedom of the press and the right to organize political parties. Leftists support this. But if we had freedom of the press now, China's media would be completely dominated by rich people and foreigners.
Zhang himself advocates a return to the more egalitarian days of Chairman Mao's rule. For now, debate about Charter 08 is mostly limited to intellectual circles, since authorities have censored any mention of it from the media and the internet. In an interview last year, Liu Xiaobo said this is why the plight of China's dissidents remains largely unknown.
Things that are not exposed in the domestic media cannot generate the pressure of public opinion. Dissidents can only rely on pressure from foreign governments, media, and NGOs.
China has rejected U.S. and European governments' recent calls to release Liu. A verdict in his case is expected at a time when many foreigners' attentions will be elsewhere on Christmas Day. Anthony Kuhn, NPR News, Beijing.
One environmental leader says if we keep doing what we're doing, the world will continue on a path toward economic decline and eventual collapse. Lester Brown heads up the Earth Policy Institute. He's written a series of books on changes that need to be made. His most recent is Plan B 4.0. Lester Graham of the Environment Report talked with him about the complexities involved in a few commodities that we take for granted.
You've made the case that we're overusing well, just about everything. I wanted to pick three examples: fish, corn, and coal. First, fish.
Well, the oceans, of course, are under extraordinary stress. We're seeing fisheries collapse in various parts of the world. A lot of things that used to be on the menu, a lot of forms of seafood, are no longer there in many parts of the world.
I don't think too many people realize just how much corn production in the U.S. is dependent on fossil fuels. The fertilizer is derived from natural gas. We're literally dependent on fossil fuels for corn production. And now we're turning some of that food, that corn in particular, back into fuel, corn ethanol.
Not everyone is saying that corn ethanol is good for the environment. The energy content of a gallon of ethanol is about two-thirds that of a gallon of gasoline. So you don't get very good mileage with ethanol. The weakness in the system, the principal weakness, is that it takes a lot of land. If you look at an acre of corn land, you can grow corn on that and with good prices maybe get $800 worth of corn. You can also site a wind turbine on that acre and get $300,000 worth of electricity. If we're moving toward plug-in hybrids and all-electric cars, as we are, then corn simply cannot compete in terms of land use efficiency with wind turbines.
Well, let's talk about electric generation. 45% of the electricity generated in the United States comes from burning coal. And now we're hearing about clean coal.
The thing that we're beginning to realize are the indirect costs of burning coal, which include health care. A recent study by the Physicians for Social Responsibility indicate that I think we're running up something like a $62 billion a year health bill associated with coal. This does not include mercury contamination, for example. It's interesting that the coal industry has had this huge campaign on clean coal, but the industry itself has invested very little in actually producing clean coal. I think coal use in this country has peaked and is declining and will continue to decline.
Now, we've been talking about three fairly simple commodities, fish, corn, and coal. How am I supposed to know what to buy, how to deal with these larger global issues that you study all the time? You know, I'm just one person. What can I do?
Well, the most important thing, it seems to me, is that we all need to get involved with environmental issues that are important to us. In World War II, after the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, what was at stake was the future of democracy itself. What's at stake now is the future of civilization, because we're seeing countries beginning to break down under the many stresses that are developing, and over time even stronger governments may not be able to deal with some of the new issues like rising sea level and potentially millions, even tens and hundreds of millions of rising sea refugees, shrinking food supplies because of rising sea level and melting mountain glaciers. I don't think at any time since civilization began there's been such a serious threat to its future, at least as we know it.
Lester Brown is an author of many books, including Plan B 4.0, and he's the founder of Earth Policy Institute. Thanks for taking time to talk to us.
Lester, my pleasure.
Lester Graham spoke with Lester Brown, who heads up the Earth Policy Institute and the author of the book Plan B 4.0.
Hi, this is Julie Pride, administrator of the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District. You may have heard that there has been a non-safety, voluntary recall of some of the flu mist used in the H1N1 vaccination. If you or your child received any of the recalled H1N1 flu mist, you do not need to be concerned. The mist was recalled because it may lose some of its effectiveness before its expiration date. The vaccine that you received is both safe and effective. It was not recalled for any safety reason. CUPHD and all of our community partners will stop using all of the recalled mist now, before its expiration date. If you received any of the flu mist, you can rest assured that it was both safe and effective. Visit willconnect.org/health and click on the map to your right to find a health department near you, or you can call my office for assistance at 217-352-7961.
Earth and sky.
We cannot do without more and better science. Better science which addresses the need of the small farmer. Where are those technologies which will help people do better?
You're listening to Hans Herren, agricultural scientist and president of the Millennium Institute, an organization focused on sustainable development. Herren helped oversee a 2008 report assessing the state of agricultural knowledge, science, and technology around the globe.
The resilience and the solution, I think, for our food supply lies in more diversity.
Dr. Herren's work has led him to believe that in order to feed an estimated 9 billion people by the year 2050, agricultural science must focus on the needs of small-scale and family farmers. Herren said that today, small farmers in developing countries are already struggling with water shortages and soil depletion.
We know everything about the genome of rice and maize. We know nothing about the medium in which they grow.
He believes that more scientists need to study the biology of the soil, meaning its mix of insects,